Okay, let's go through our review. We've got a few questions in our review section this morning, starting with question number 65. So open your notebooks under the review section. We'll cover question 65 in the next few questions. This question has to do with something we've been studying on last Wednesday night. And question number 65, let me just open it up to the class on any volunteers. So question 65, it says, what nations are judgments pronounced in chapters 24 through 27? So who are the nations? Jim? Okay. Right. And so the point is, it's talking about the earth, and that's used to represent the whole world. So the answer to the question is really no specific nations. Up through chapter 23, we've been reading judgments on all these different individual nations. In this section that we studied, 24 through 27, there's no specific, it's the world as a whole. Okay, we talked about, here's question 66. What is meant, we read about this on Wednesday, about this everlasting covenant in 24 verse 5. What is this everlasting covenant that's mentioned in chapters 24, verse 5? What is that? Okay, Kim says, love God, love your neighbor. And we talked about this everlasting covenant, and we mentioned that actually it occurs 16 times in Scripture. We looked at some different uses. You usually have to determine by context what it means. And here this judgment is on the whole world. These are nations that are not Jews, so we know it's not the Mosaical covenant. Just like Kim said, it's a covenant that we're all under because of who we are, being mankind. Love God, love your neighbor. And that's what this everlasting covenant was. And they violated that. And as a result of that, the world will receive judgments. So again, this makes the point that as we all know, that all mankind, and every man and woman, are under law. This point bears that out. Question number 67. Six woes pronounced against certain groups of people. In chapters 28 through 33. Who are they? We actually didn't cover this question, but you had that in your notes. So there's six woes against groups of people. Who would like to name some of the woes? Question 67. Okay, Ephraim. Okay, six woes. We read in the previous section about oracles against nations. And so in this particular section that we're studying here, you know, the title is The Lord is the Only Source of Deliverance. And it starts with these woes. And so we have all these woes. And we covered Ephraim. We talked about that on a Wednesday. We didn't finish this. We'll pick up on number two, talking about Ariel this morning. Okay, question number 68. Why were the leaders of Jerusalem scorned by the Lord in 28 verses 9 through 22? Why were they scorned? John, why did?
They made a covenant with death, a pact with Sheol.
Right. They made a covenant with death. You say, well, what is this covenant of death? And what evidently it meant that they couldn't be hurt by, you know, they were going to be safe. They were going to be secure. And of course, it was a covenant, and of course, it was a covenant of death. It wasn't a covenant of security or salvation. It was just the opposite. Okay. I think that's all the review. Oh, I have one more review question. Now, let's go all the way back to, we'll pick up an old question. We'll actually start with our very first question here. Question number one. What are three reasons? You know, we've been in the study for these last few months. What are three reasons to study Isaiah, provide the Scriptures? Question number one. Doug?
Shows examples to avoid. We may have hope in Christ. There's hope, and we build faith in the purpose of God.
Okay. Good, Doug. And on the overhead, and you probably already have these Scriptures there. We've talked about that when we first started our class. Okay, so let's pick up where we left off on last Wednesday. So we're in this section here, chapters 28 through 39. is the Lord is the only source of deliverance. So we're on lesson number 15, page 72. And in this particular section, we already talked about kind of a more detailed outline. There are six woes, and we're dealing with the second woe here. Chapters 34 and 35, we're going to deal with a prophecy against Edom. Chapter 34, 35 is the promise of Zion's glory. We'll talk about that hopefully this morning. And then the last chapters in this section, 36 to 39, is a historical account. Okay, so open your Bibles to Isaiah chapter 29, and we'll pick up there. Isaiah chapter 29. So this woe, as we already mentioned, is a woe to the city of Ariel, which is Jerusalem. And it goes on also in this woe, in this chapter, is a second woe, and those who hide their plans from God. So let's read a few verses here. In this first section here, verses 1 through 8, is Jerusalem will be afflicted, but later delivered. So let's pick up in 29:1. It says, "Woe, O Ariel, Ariel, the city where David once encamped. Add year to year, observe your feast on schedule." In the New American Standard, you'll see that there's a little footnote on the word Ariel. And if you look at your little footnote, it means the Lion of God. That's what the word Ariel means. In some other versions, there also will be footnotes on it. And in those footnotes, we'll say the hearth of God. Hearth is like a fireplace. And so that's what this term is referring to, you know, referring to, you know, the Lion of God or the hearth or there. That's what it means. And if you look at the last part of verse 1 here you find the attitude of the people. The last line in verse 1 says, "Add year to year, observe your feast on schedules." And so this is what the people were doing. They were very festive. They were very joyous, right? Add year to year, like, you know, we're going to have next year, we're going to go fine. We're going to observe all our feasts on schedule. Things are just going to proceed like normally. So you see that the people are in a festive mood. They're secure in how they view things. But now let's look at read verses 2 through 3. It says, "And I will bring distress to Ariel, and she shall be a city of lamenting and mourning. And she shall be like Ariel, like an Ariel to me. And I will camp against you, encircling you. And I will set siege works against you. And I will raise up battle towers against you." So here we find that another woe. It's woe on the city. And in verse 3, you see that, actually verses 2 and 3, you know, who's doing all this? We find that, you know, I will, talking about the Lord, I will camp against it. I will set up siege works. I will raise up. Here we find the Lord bringing judgment on their city. And, you know, even though they were in a very festive mood because of their iniquities, judgment's going to be brought against them. Now, this section here, we said this whole section, these several chapters through 39, is the Lord is the only source of deliverance. You start with this, whoa, well, there's no deliverance here. Man, it's a woe, it's judgment. But right here in this section, look at starting in verse 5. Now, in verse 5, here you have this deliverance. You have this salvation talking about. Look at verse 5. It says, "But the multitude of your enemies shall become like fine dust, and the multitude of the ruthless ones like the chaff which blows away. And it shall happen instantly, suddenly. For the Lord of hosts, you will be punished with the thunder and earthquake and loud noise, with whirlwind and tempest and the flame of consuming fire. And the multitude of all the nations who wage war against Ariel, even those who wage war against her in her stronghold and who distress her, shall be like a dream, a vision of the night." And so here we have the deliverance. Of course, it's coming from the Lord. The one who brought this persecution is also going to go ahead and deliver them. We talked about that this particular section, when Isaiah is writing, remember he's writing these visions according to these four kings. And this section right here is when he's writing the visions when Hezekiah is reigning. Remember, Hezekiah was a very righteous king. But evidently, as we read here, very likely this chapter 29 is talking about what's soon going to happen. That Jerusalem's going to be surrounded by Assyria. You know, King Sennacherib, he's going to persecute it. He's aimed to destroy it. And in the last few chapters of this section here, of course, the Lord delivers Jerusalem. And this prophecy is very likely talking about that deliverance. And so Isaiah is writing it, and shortly, in a few years, you know, it's going to come to pass. The Lord will deliver it. And as you read this thing, it sounds very similar to what happened historically, right? Jerusalem was surrounded. They were laying siege. They captured all the cities around Jerusalem. They were getting ready to come in and invade it with this very, very large army. And what happened? And we know the historical account how the angel came in and killed 185,000 in one night. See how quickly that happened? And what does his vision say? It's going to happen very suddenly. And their enemy, and it says, that persecution will be like a dream. It was there, and then it's gone. Why? Because the Lord has delivered them. Okay, this next section, starting in verse 9, is a section here and that we titled here, Irreverence, for God's Word was a cause of Jerusalem affliction, starting in verse 9 through verse 14. And let's just pick up one verse here. Now, again, if this was written during the time that Hezekiah reigned, remember, Hezekiah is a very righteous king. He removed all the idolatry, all the high places. But here you're seeing about the people. Well, remember, the people acted very wickedly during King Ahaz's time. They were involved in this idolatry. And evidently, the people are not like King Hezekiah, being righteous and doing what he is. Now, here we find what he says here in verse 13. They're still irreverent. So in verse 13, then the Lord said, you see here that in chapter 28, talk to the leaders. This section here really talking to the people. Now look at verse 13. Then the Lord said, because this people draw near with their words, they honor me with their lip service, they remove their heart far from me, and the reverence for me consists of tradition learned by rote. So here we find this irreverence, right? The people aren't listening to the word and obeying. They're hearing it, they're paying lip service to it. But as Isaiah is writing to them, about their heart. What about their heart? The heart's far from the Lord. And instead of revering Him and giving true worship, they're going through the motions. They consist of tradition learned by rote. Of course, rote added by the translators. But the point is, they're doing this irreverence, not from the heart, just for sake of tradition. And so this was the problem. They were irreverent still during this time, even though King Hezekiah was a very righteous king. Okay, so that's the woe on Ariel. Now, the next woe is also in this chapter, and we actually broke it out because we start with another woe in verse 15. And this woe here is woe from those who hide their plans from God. And there's actually two subsections here. In this first section, we just use right out of the text how to describe it. Now, let's read verse 15 of 29. It says, woe to those. So here's another woe. We talk about six woes. Here's the third woe. Woe to those who deeply hide their plans from the Lord, and whose deeds are done in a dark place. For they say, who sees us or who knows us? So here we find another picture of the people, right? And how they thought, that's how they were thinking. They could hide their plans from God. That God wasn't knowledgeable about what's in their heart and what plans they have made. And again, we find, of course, we know God does know that, and we find this woe on them. This next section here, starting in verse 17, is a section that is messianic, I believe. And in Isaiah, we talked about messianic prophecy. Sometimes messianic prophecy is very clear. You go to the New Testament, you can see it quoted in the New Testament. It's clearly messianic. There's other places in Isaiah where you read it and it's clearly messianic. And there are other places where it's very subtle. Is it messianic or is it not? In this section, I believe it is messianic. And just let's pick up verse 17 and note things about it. It says, it is not yet just a little while before Lebanon will be turned into a fertile field. And the fertile field will be considered as a forest. And on that day, the deaf shall hear the words of the book. And out of the gloom and the darkness of the eyes of the blind shall see. And afflicted, verse 19, the afflicted shall also increase their gladness in the Lord, and the needy of mankind shall rejoice in the Holy One of Israel. For the ruthless will come to an end, the scorner will be finished. Indeed, all who are intent on doing evil will be cut off. And if you look at the last part, look at verse 22. Therefore, thus says the Lord, who redeemed Abram concerning the house of Jacob, Jacob shall not now be ashamed, nor shall his face turn pale. So as you look through this one, you look at verse 24. And those who are in mind will know the truth, and those who criticize will accept instruction. So here, and again, it's a subtle. Is it messianic or is it not? And I believe it is messianic. And usually when these subtle passages, things that I look for is when you have things talking about other than Jews. So this is the needy of mankind. It's all mankind. Of course, that would not pertain to the Jews. And you see, as we read this thing, things that are absolute. You know, all the ruthless will come to an end. When you read these things that are absolute, things like that, those are other indicators that's likely messianic. But this section here, it's very subtle. It's not clear, you know, that it is messianic. I do believe it is, but it's a very subtle section here. But again, we find that, you know, again, we see this hope, this salvation, this deliverance that are being mentioned. Okay, let's go on now to the next chapter, chapter 30, and go to the next woe, chapter 30. And this is a woe against the rebellious children who make an alliance with Egypt. And we'll see that as we read chapter 30. And in this first few verses through verse 17, Judah trusted in the strength of Egypt, but their help will be in vain. And note this. So in chapter 30 and verse 1, so here we find our woe. Woe to the rebellious children. Again, this is written to the Jews, the people in Judah, as declares the Lord, who execute a plan, but not mine, who make an alliance, but not of my spirit, in order to add sin to sin, who proceed down to Egypt without consulting me, to take refuge in the safety of Pharaoh, and to seek shelter in the shadow of Egypt. In verse 3, therefore, the safety of Pharaoh will be your shame, and the shelter in the shadow of Egypt your humiliation. So here we find this woe, and we find very clearly why it's being executed against the people is because they're trying to rely on someone other than the Lord. They're trying to rely on Egypt. I think I mentioned this on Wednesday. When you go to the historical accounts in Kings or Chronicles during the time of Hezekiah, and we went through this when we did the historical count, I don't think you'll find in the Kings or the Chronicles section any reference to Judah trying to make an alliance during this time with Egypt. But you're going to find it here and also in the next chapter, Isaiah, you know, pronouncing a woe on those people who are. And this is where I would suggest, I think, on Wednesday that there evidently there were some people in Judah, maybe some of the leaders who were still thinking, well, look, we need to make an alliance, we're being assaulted by Assyria. Assyria, you know, this time likely Assyria has taken the northern kingdom. They're wanting protection, and some of them, you know, want to make an alliance with Egypt. And of course, this woe is pronounced on them. One thing to think about here about as Isaiah is writing this, remember we already talked about Ethiopia and Egypt, right? Remember the judgments on nations? Remember there was a judgment on Ethiopia and Egypt, chapters 18, 19, and 20. You remember what Isaiah did as a sign to show that judgment would come to pass? You remember that? He went around with just loincloths for 3 years. He was barefooted. He took out his outer garment, had his inner garments on, and as a sign to the people, this judgment on Ethiopia and Egypt come. He walked around for 3 years. Okay, he did that likely before this. Now, what are the people still wanting to do? Here's a judgment. He went through this thing physically for 3 years. And here are these people again want to go back and make this alliance. And so we find this woe being pronounced on them. Okay, so here we have the woe. Now, let's go now to verse 18 of the same chapter. And here we find the section we've actually titled here. Now, this particular section, I actually changed what I had in your notes here. You might want to write this down in your notebook. I think I had in your notebook, the Messiah will bring a time of true security and help in this section 18 through 26. After going back and looking at it, and again, this is one of those another places where it's subtle. Before I thought it was messianic. Now I've gone back and I don't think it's messianic. So the way I've titled this section here, if you want to write it down in your notes, the Lord hears and delivers his people, verses 18 through 26. Let's just read a few of the verses. And you find a lot of this, as you read here, a lot of it pertaining to the physical. There's two verses here that before I indicate, we'll read them here in a minute, that maybe it was messianic, but now I don't think so. But let's look at verse 18. It says, therefore, so you have this woe pronounced. Now, verse 18. Therefore, the Lord longs to be gracious to you. So again, we find this pattern all through Isaiah. Judgment, a woe, judgment. And what do you usually find right after that? Salvation, deliverance. In many cases, messianic. But here it says, verse 18. Therefore, the Lord longs to be gracious to you. And therefore, he waits on high to have compassion on you. For the Lord is a God of justice. How blessed are those who long for them. It says, O people in Zion, inhabitants of Jerusalem, you will weep no longer. He will surely be gracious to you at the sound of your cry. When he hears it, he will answer you. And verse 20 talks about how, you know, this given the Lord, using figuratively, giving them the bread of privation and the water of oppression, you know, the oppression that they're undergoing. But he's not going to hide himself from them, but he's going to, you know, they're going to be delivered. And so I think this is not messianic, but physical. The verse that, when I read this before, I thought was messianic, it started in verse 26. Again, it's a figurative picture here. And is it messianic? I don't think so now. It says, and the light of the moon will be as the light of the sun. And the light of the sun will be seven times brighter than the light of 7 days. On that day, the Lord binds the fracture of his people and heals the bruises he has afflicted. So that was the verse that I said, well, maybe this is messianic because of, you know, again, you find this picture of brightness, of perfection. The sun will be seven times, not literally seven times, but it'll be perfectly, you know, it'll be perfection. And you see, you have this brightness. I think this is talking about the blessings. So that kind of keyed me before to messianic. But again, there's a couple of sections here in these chapters where it's subtle, whether it's messianic or not. So I don't know how, when you read that, if you read the title, it says, where is Rocky getting messianic out of that? I don't see it. Well, now I'm having some questions whether it really is messianic or not. Okay, the last section here, starting in verse 27 all the way through the end, is now we have Assyrians who are the ones who are oppressing Judah and Jerusalem at this time. They will reap God's vengeance. And as you read this, it's not clear it's Assyria, but this is, you know, from the historical account, and, you know, where Isaiah is writing, in this section, it's Assyria. It says, behold, the name of the Lord comes from a remote place, burned his anger and dense in his smoke. His lips are filled with indignation, and his tongue is like a consuming fire. And his breath is like an overflowing torrent which reaches to the neck, to shake the nations back and forth in a sieve, and to put the jaws of the people the bridle which leads to the ruin. And then it goes on talking about, well, actually it does say in verse 31 about Assyria. For at the voice of the Lord, Assyria will be terrified when he strikes with a rod. So yeah, this one definitely has Assyria in it. So this is a section that Assyrians, again, are going to receive a judgment. They're going to be struck down. You remember Assyria before? We call Assyria was the rod of God's anger. God used Assyria against Judah and the northern kingdom. They were his rod. Now you see how the picture is now reversed. Now God is striking Assyria, to them being the rod. He's striking them with the rod. And so they will reap God's vengeance for their judgments and how they carried on their oppression of the nation. Okay, so let's move on now to chapter 31. Go on to the next woe. And again, this is another woe on Egypt. And again, evidently this was a big problem. Isaiah spent spent a couple of chapters here talking about this issue concerning him. And, well, of course, the Holy Spirit's guiding him to write this. So chapter 31 is also another woe on Egypt. It says, woe to those who go down to Egypt and rely on horses, chariots, and horsemen is this chapter about. And this first section is trust in either Egypt or Assyria is folly. So let's look at 31:1. Very clearly it says, woe to those who go down to Egypt for help and rely on horses and trust in chariots because they are many, and in horsemen because they are very strong. And here's the problem. But they do not look to the Holy One of Israel nor seek the Lord. Yet he is also wise and will bring disaster and not retract his words. But he will rise against the house of evildoers and against the help of the workers of iniquity. And so, again, we see this particular woe. And actually, this woe actually goes all the way through this short chapter, verse 9. Now, this next section here is actually kind of grouped together. These two chapters here is now this. Chapter 32 is about this new era is coming in which men can trust in a king who reigns in righteousness. So this is definitely messianic here. So here he's talking about this woe, and now he's going to go ahead and jump to messianic. And let's read a couple of verses here of chapter 32. He says, behold. If you noticed here in Isaiah, how many times we read the word behold? Well, Isaiah will use this word behold to highlight something. So here's this woe you just pronounced on those who rely on Egypt for help. Now it says, behold, a king will reign righteousness, and princes will rule justly. And each one will be like a refuge from the wind and a shelter from the storm, like streams of waters in a dry country, like the shade of a huge rock in a parched land. So here in this section here, he's looking at, again, messianic. He's looking toward the Messiah. This is the king. There's always been some question here, is this king really the Messiah, right? King Hezekiah was a righteous king. If this was written during Hezekiah's time, note the tense of the word, behold, a king will reign in righteousness. And when you look at the word righteousness, well, was Hezekiah completely righteous? We know he even though he was the two best kings, he had a fault. Remember when he showed all the treasures to the people of Babylon? So, you know, and Isaiah rebuked him for that. So he wasn't completely righteous. And you have will reign, and then likely not looking at Josiah reign. So this is messianic. And we've talked about the king, right? We talked about that in chapter 11 about the king. About the Messiah was identified being there as a king. And so here we have, again, the king being mentioned, and he's going to reign in righteousness. This verse here, the second line of the verse is a tough part of the verse. The line that we just read, and princes will rule justly. So the question is, okay, if the king is the Messiah, who are the princes? They will rule justly. And then, as we read in verse 2, it says, and each, talking about the king and like of the princes, if this is messianic, you might say, well, I never have read about how Christians are princes. You won't read that, right? In the New Testament, we know Christians are referred to as brethren. They're referred to as a royal priesthood, never referred to as princes. So there's a lot of question about who these princes are. Could it be the apostles and prophets? Could it be Christians? And then the question is, well, if they are Christians, what does it mean? Are Christians going to rule justly? How are we reigning justly? The last part of verse 1 is difficult. I'm not so sure I fully understand who the princes are. One thing I do want to point out, though, is if you read verse 2, and each will be a refuge, it almost appears as referencing the king and the princes. Here, it's good to check other translations. In the first part of verse 2, if you had the King James or the American Standard, instead of saying, and each, it says, and a man. And that man was the same word that's used to refer to the branch, which we know was Christ. And so, princes may be Christians, but then you say, how will they rule justly? I don't know if I asked you, actually didn't give you a verse. In Romans chapter 5, verse 17, you don't need to turn there. It talks about how we will reign. Let's turn there while we're talking about. Let's turn to Romans chapter 5, verse 17. Possibly this could mean Christians and how Christians reign. It's not like on a throne, but it's in a different sense. Here in Romans chapter 5 and verse 17, talking about Adam and Christ, and making that contrast between the two. It says, and if by transgression of the one, talking about Adam, death reigned through one, of course, bring it through physical death, much more those who receive the abundance of grace and the gift of righteousness will reign, and that's the Christians, will reign in life through the one Jesus Christ. And so here, Christians are pictured reigning in life. And so maybe back here in Isaiah, when it says princes will rule justly, not talking about that we will physically rule, not be on a throne like the Messiah is, but we will be under the reign of one, the king who reigns righteous one. But again, this is a difficult part, and again, I'm really not clear for sure who the princes are. So we mentioned when we studied Isaiah, there's some things that you study, there are a lot of question marks, and sometimes you just don't know, you know, precisely what Isaiah may be talking about there. So we come across that several times already in Isaiah. Okay, back in Isaiah chapter 32, we go on to the next section here. And we won't cover that section starting in verse 9 through 20. It says there's a call to hear the Lord. And it's illustrated or exemplified in women. And so Isaiah is going to be using that as an example. But the message here is basically a call to hear. You know, hear the word. Okay, so let's move on now to the next woe, chapter 33. And chapter 33 is our last woe, the sixth woe. Woe to you, O destroyer. Now, this is the one where it's not identified in chapter 33 who the destroyer is. But as we already read about, that was Assyria. And also note here, and you say, well, how many times does Isaiah have to pronounce these woes on Assyria? Right? We just read it. Here's another woe. And if you recall back in chapter 8, we read a section about a woe on Assyria. Again, this is a pattern Isaiah. He'll be repeating himself many times. You remember the judgment of Babylon. He mentioned that. He's going to be mentioned it three times. We already talked about two times, judgment of Babylon. He's going to mention it a third time, later in Isaiah. So Isaiah repeats a lot of things. And so here we go again. Woe to O destroyer. While you were not destroyed, and he who is treacherous, while others did not deal treacherously with him, as soon as you're finished destroying, you will be destroyed. And as soon as you shall cease to deal treacherously, others shall deal treacherously with you. And of course, that would be the Babylonians, as we know from the historical account. So again, we find this woe being pronounced on Assyria. Now, just like we find in this section here is against the foes of Judah. Now, just like we saw in the previous chapter, again, we find a section that's messianic. And go to verse 17. In the previous chapter, we talked about the king, right? The king's going to rule righteously. Now Isaiah's going to come back to the king. Again, I believe this is definitely messianic. We'll pick up a few verses to see that. So here he's talking about this war in Assyria, at the time of the writing, 700 years. And he's jumping to the messianic era. He says, and your eyes will see the king in his beauty. And they will behold a far distant land. Your heart will meditate on terror. Where is he who counts? Where is he who weighs? Where is he who counts the towers? And so they're going to see this king. Now drop down to verse 22. And it's clearly you'll see this is messianic. It says, verse 22, for the Lord is our judge. The Lord is our lawgiver. The Lord is our king. He will save us. And so, messianic here. Okay, so now let's move to the next. Yes.
Do you have somewhere in your notes a list of the criteria that you use to determine whether something's messianic or not? Like, number one, obviously, if it's quoted in the New Testament. Number two, refer to the nations. I notice you have in your own mind at least several criteria. Do you have that list anywhere?
Steve, I don't, but as I've gone through this and looking at these things, I've decided I need to develop a list. In my mind, I've done it, but I don't actually have it in my notes. But something I'll do.
That would be helpful to us to benefit from your study on that.
Yeah, I think I'll develop a list and send it all to you, provide a copy for it. I've kind of mentioned it verbally, and I'll probably do that and kind of give some examples. So this is one I do believe is messianic because, definitely verse 2 and again, the absolute, look at verse 21, but they're the majestic one, the Lord shall be for us. You see this, you look to Zion, the city of our appointed feet, your eyes shall see Jerusalem. This is the new Zion. This is not the old Zion. It's an undisturbed habitation. Okay? That's messianic because Jerusalem eventually, of course, is going to be destroyed by Babylon. But later on, even in the Roman times, Rome's going to destroy Jerusalem. Jerusalem, the physical city of Jerusalem, is not going to be undisturbed forever. But that is true of the spiritual Zion. And so there's some other keys here in this section that shows it's messianic. Okay, let's go now to chapters 34 and 35. Now, these two chapters come together as a unit. And again, you're going to find the kind of same pattern we've been seeing in Isaiah. 34 is going to be one of judgment. 35 is going to be one of joy, salvation for deliverance. So let's see that starting in chapter 34. And let's read verses 1 through 4. And here is almost a general statement about all those who come against God's people. And it's an appeal to all mankind. And note this in 34 verse 1. It says, draw near, O nations, to hear and listen, O people. So this is a call not just to Judah. It's a call to everyone. Let the earth and all it contains hear and the world and all that spring from it. For the Lord's indignation is against all nations, and His wrath against all their armies. He has utterly destroyed them. In verse 3, so that their slain will be thrown out, and the corpse will give off their stench, and the mountains will be drenched with their blood. And all the host of heaven will wear away, and the sky will be rolled up like a scroll. And all their host will also wither away, as a leaf withers from the vine, or as one who withers from the fig tree. And so you find here is the Lord's indignation. And we titled here in this section here, you advance the slides here to where we're at. So we find this judgment, and then you look in verse 6 here, and he makes mention of Edom. He says, the sword of the Lord is filled with blood. It is sated with fat, with the blood of lambs and goats, with the fat of the kidney of rams. For the Lord has a sacrifice in Bozrath, that's a city in Edom, and a great slaughter in the land of Edom. So Edom is being used here as being singled out, but it's not just being singled out as just a particular judgment on Edom. Edom is being used, I think, here a representative of all the enemies of God who are against His people. And just using them as an example. Because, you know, it's not just, as we find here in verse 1, you know, this is a call to all nations, all those who are against His people. Okay, then we go to chapter 35, and then we find this picture changed again. Okay, so here we find in chapter 34 this destruction, you know, this blood, all this destruction's coming upon. And note verse 35, 1, picture changes. And here we find, you know, the way we title it, those redeemed by the Lord will find gladness and joy. And you'll see that. Now look, verse 35, 1. It says, the wilderness and the desert will be glad, and the Arab will rejoice and blossom like the crocus. It will blossom profusely and rejoice with rejoicing and shout of joy. The glory of Lebanon will be given to it, and the majesty of Carmel and Sharon. They will see the glory of the Lord, the majesty of our God. So here we find this picture now of deliverance. You see this beautiful scenery being painted by Isaiah. And you find here, now to the Jew here, these places that are mentioned are places of beauty to the Jew. Lebanon, we talked about, was a forest, beautiful forest. They got a lot of timber. Carmel, Mount Carmel, was a beautiful mountain peak in that particular area. Sharon was a fertile valley, very beautiful. These are terms to the Jew would be places of beauty. And we have like places like that today, like Alaska or the Rocky Mountains. And the Jew, when he's talking about all this, you know, the Jews would be picturing these beautiful places. And they're seeing all this glory and how things were a wilderness. Now they're going to be blossom. Things are going to be blooming as rain, you know, waters a desert and these flowers bloom. Okay, you say, well, is this messianic? Sure, we get this picture of joy and beauty. As we go on and read, we'll see that here in verse 35, I mean, in this chapter, you'll see that it's definitely one of salvation. Go down to verse 8. Okay, so in here, verse 8, you know this is messianic. And we've talked about this highway before. Here in verse 8, it says, and a highway will be there, a roadway, and it will be called the highway of holiness. The unclean will not travel on it, but it will be for him who walks that way, and the fools will not wander on it. So here we find this highway of holiness, and definitely this is messianic, right? There's no unholy will travel on it. This is not a literal highway. This is a spiritual highway. And it's a highway leading to Zion, and only the redeemed or the redeemed will travel on it. You know, there will be no unclean person there. And of course, that's messianic, all made possible through what Christ did. Christ redeemed, made us clean. We can walk on this highway of holiness. And then it goes on and talks about these fools. And these fools here, I think, is used like Proverbs uses the word fools. Those who despise knowledge, not wanting to, you know the Word of God. You know, fool's not going to be on this highway. So here we find that, you know, this picture of gladness and joy. It's messianic. Talking about the new Zion, there will be this highway. And you see it's, where is Zion? Look at verse 10. And the ransom of the Lord will return, and it will come with joyful shouting. Where are they going? To Zion. This highway is leading to Zion. And, you know, where God's people will be. He's going to provide them protection and security. You know, again, this is looking toward the messianic era. So again, so here we find this last, as this last chapter here, one of deliverance, one of salvation, and again, it's messianic. So we've seen here through this section here many times where messianic is going to looking at messianic, but it's not just messianic. We also seen a lot of physical deliverance. Okay, so that completes this section here. We're not going to cover chapters 36, 37, 38, and 39, because we already did that when we did the section on the historical count. These were historical counts that are almost identical, 2 Kings 18 through 20. We already covered that. But again, this kind of reinforces, right? Remember we read this prophecy, the destroyer is going to be destroyed, it's going to happen very suddenly. Now you have this historical count of what happened, that, you know, Jerusalem was delivered by the Lord. And so, and not only that, we also find Hezekiah being delivered from death, being added more years to his life. Okay, so with the last few minutes remaining, let's make some practical application to some of our lessons. Now, we didn't cover some of the lessons from Wednesday. I actually want to go back and look at a couple of verses here. Go to chapter 25, verses 6 through 8. This was a section here where we were talking about the Lord's judgment on the world. And this was actually a messianic year. And let's get 25, verse 6. It says, "And the Lord of hosts will prepare a lavish banquet for all peoples on this mountain." I think a lesson, when I read that, it kind of made, in this time of the year, we just finished the holiday season where we have a lot of, you know, meals with the family, time of feasting and Thanksgiving, Christmas holidays. I'm sure a lot of you had family over, prepared these lavish feasts. Consider this one here, though. This is a banquet here. It's a lavish banquet. And, you know, you think about all the effort that, you know, the women and others, you know, prepare all these different meals. So here we also have a banquet. But who's preparing this banquet? You know, it's the Lord, right? The Lord of hosts will prepare a lavish banquet. And this is messianic. So think about that. And of course, this is all being used figurative. You know, today we are enjoying this lavish feast. Who's prepared by it? The Lord. You know, is there any limits to what the Lord will provide in terms of, you know, the blessings? You know, it's unlimitless. And so today we're enjoying this lavish banquet, being, you know, part of the body of saved people. And when you read that, here Isaiah is reading this. He's looking way forward to the time. Hopefully that gave the people that time some hope, something to look forward to. But what about us today? You know, we should have today an attitude of rejoicing and thanksgiving for the feast that we're eating today. Sometimes we don't think about it. We don't think about the spiritual blessings. Well, figuratively, as Isaiah described it, you know, we're enjoying this lavish banquet. If you turn the chapter, look at verses 1 through 6. I think another lesson that I got through this particular chapter here, and this section here is about trusting in the Lord. And actually, remember, we talked about this was a song of deliverance. Look at verse 4. "Trust in the Lord forever." Verse 5. "For he's brought low those who dwell on high, the unsalable city. He lays low. He lays it to the ground. He casts it to the dust. The foot will trample it, the feet afflict it, and the steps of the helpless." Here we find God's security. You know, he's the everlasting rock. And what are we to do? Verse 4, we are to trust in the Lord forever. So trust in him for what he's provided for us, for the security and protection, for all the blessings we have here. So hopefully as we've studied here in Isaiah, we've seen a lot of lessons that we can apply today. A lot of things Isaiah's writing about, they're messianic, you know. And so we should take these lessons and, you know, it should prick our hearts and our minds, and we should be a people of great rejoicing and great thanksgiving for all the blessings that we have. Okay, now you may be wondering on our schedule here, we were supposed to cover lesson 16. I delayed starting that because we got a little bit behind. So we'll start the next lesson, 16, on Wednesday. So if you went ahead and got that lesson done, great, and we'll begin that on Wednesday night. Okay, thank you for your good attention.